And that's me. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend John, engineering and producing our program. Together, a hearty welcome. It's Tuesday, the 10th day of January 2023. We are broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on the campus of Bustos Media Tucson. The radio station is 1030 Tucson, Arizona's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening, always available at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. In 1990, the first human development report from the United Nations Development Program introduced a new approach for advancing human well-being. Human development, or the human development approach, is about expanding the richness of human life rather than simply the richness of the economy in which human beings live. It's an approach that is focused on people and their opportunities and choices. Joining us now on the live line, Pedro Conceição, director of the United Nations Human Development Report Office in the UN Development Program. Let's welcome the director now on the live line. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk. Well, it's our pleasure. Let's talk a little bit about this latest report, which certainly highlights a world that finds no shortage of things to worry about, correct?
Indeed. And one of the things that surprised us as we were writing the report was to look at the evidence that suggested that many people around the world were feeling insecure about many aspects of their life. We found that 6 out of every 7 people around the world were feeling insecure. And also we found that about half of the population around the world does not believe that their living conditions today are better than the ones that their parents lived with. So we were surprised with evidence suggesting that people were feeling insecure and unsettled about the world we're living in.
You know, in my introduction to your development report, I talked about, you know, how the economy, the richness of human life rather than simply the richness of the economy in which the humans live. Could you kind of elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely, Bill. And I think you introduced it very well, actually. So the human development approach is not saying that the economy doesn't matter, that money doesn't matter. Of course, people need money to thrive in today's market economies. But that doesn't mean that we should only look at money as the benchmark for progress or the way in which we evaluate policies. We have to look at things like education, health. Are people fulfilled in their lives? And so to account for this, we created a measure called the Human Development Index that we've been tracking since 1990. To try to capture and measure how countries are doing when it comes to this broader notion of well-being associated with human development.
Which countries are doing a good job and which really are really lacking?
Well, I think the most striking finding from our last report, Bill, is actually that if you go back to 1990 up until 2 or 3 years ago, globally, there was a trend of improvement in this human development index. So globally, things were getting better, economies were growing, education was improving. And of course, every year you would find a few countries in which things were not going as well. But what is striking, and these countries change from year to year, but what is striking is in 2020 and 2021, for the first time ever, this global human development index declined. And over the course of these 2 years, more than 9 out of every 10 countries around the world suffered a decline in the human development index. So we witnessed something unprecedented, really, over the last 2 years or so, or at least 2020 and 2021, which was not only a decline in the global human development index, but a widespread decline in human development around the world in virtually every country.
And what do you think the cause is? One obvious would be the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, but there's more to this, isn't there?
Exactly. The way we look at it is that the COVID-19 pandemic was perhaps a direct cause, not the only cause, but it's really a reflection of a world that is changing around us in rather unprecedented ways. Today we heard, for instance, that the last 8 years have been the hottest on record. So climate change, we look at what's happening in California now with the floods. So the world around us is changing, and COVID-19 may have been just the latest of more frequent diseases that jump from animals to humans. Over the course of this century, the 21st century, we have one new or emerging disease of this type every 3 years on average. And this is a result also in part with the pressure that we're putting on nature that makes this jumping of diseases from animal to human, some of which are novel, like COVID-19, more likely. So in our view, this is a reflection of a world that is changing in very fundamental ways that is then reflected in the decline of the Human Development Index and can also account for in part with the numbers that I alluded to at the beginning, where people feel unsettled about the world in which we are all living in.
How about what about the cost of living crisis? Is that fueling a lot of this insecurity?
It certainly is. It's related to the fact that the purchasing power of people is being eroded as the cost of living increases, and it's driven in part by aspects that are related to not what economists traditionally look into, at least not fully. For instance, we know that a lot of the increase in prices has to do with the disruptions in supply chains in the context of COVID-19, where much economic activity was put on hold. We've also saw with the war in the Ukraine increases in energy prices and commodity prices, food prices as well, certainly in the beginning of last year or the first half of last year. So again, there are things happening in the world out there that are reflected in the cost of living crisis that are not fully circumscribed to what happens in the economy, are driven by other factors.
We're speaking with Pedro Conceição, director of the Human Development Report Office at the UN Development Program. How often is this report issued? You said the first one came out in 1990, so here we are almost 35 years later.
We issue the report every year on average. Sometimes it takes a little longer. But it aims at capturing every year to painting a picture of the state of the world from the lens of human development. This approach to well-being that considers certainly income, money, but looks at also at other aspects of life that are important to people, Bill.
There's got to be some positive out of all of this, because this report is, you know, you said it's the first time in the 35-year period where things have kind of moved backwards. It's very rather bleak, to say the least. How about giving us an optimistic note to end on?
Well, here's the good news, Bill. A lot of what's happening in the world is actually a result of choices that we're making. So if we look at climate change, if you look at these more frequent diseases that jump from animals to human as a result of the pressure that we're putting on nature, this is not something that is happening to us. You know, it's not an asteroid hitting the planet. This is a result of our choices. So it's also within our power to make different choices in ways that ease these threats that we are now living through. So in a sense, I actually find the report quite hopeful once we realize that it's actually something that we're doing to ourselves, and it's also within our power to start doing making different choices.
Pedro, thank you for spending some time with us. We'll look forward to you visiting Tucson on January the 18th, and I'm going to tell our listeners about how they can participate in that public talk. Thank you very much for connecting with us.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you again for having me on.
Pedro will be delving into the latest United Nations Development Policy Human Development Report and what it would take to build a more hopeful future in uncertain times as part of a workshop that's jointly organized by the Institute for Agency and Development at the University of Arizona. That's actually organized by the Initiative for Agency and Development at the University of Arizona and the United Nations Development Program's Human Development Report Office. That event will kick off with a public talk Wednesday, January the 18th. That will be 1 week from tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon at the University of Arizona's McClellan Park, room 105. All right, this portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by our friends at Mona's Danish Bakery. They're open right now for a great lunch. Of course, they do breakfast starting at 6:30, Tuesday through Saturday, 7 a.m. on Sunday. They are closed Monday. Their website looking really good. Beautiful pictures of everything on the menu. monasdanishbakery.com. If you haven't been there, you're missing out. Treat yourself to a beautiful pastry at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We'll be right back with Mr. Shelley Fishman giving me an enthusiastic, rather enthusiastic, thumbs up. We'll be right back with Shell. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And we welcome live back in studio Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how are you doing?
I'm doing well today, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Pedro Conceição had some very interesting things to say at the UN, and I'm glad he ended on an optimistic note. It's not like an asteroid has hit the planet. He did say that there are things, these issues that he articulated, we do have some control over.
Well, absolutely, and these are things that affect not only people's sense of self-worth and people's sense of contentedness, but also in each of the segments of you know, human study, one of which is economics, which of course you and I talk about all the time. These are the things that are the most impactful on the economy. I mean, we talk about climate change, you know, we talk about disease, we talk about war. These things just impact individuals. Some of the things he said during the segment were really in some ways alarming, that 9 out of 10 people felt
insecure,
less secure now than they did a few years ago.
And that's an extensive report conducted on around the world.
Right.
So it's not just the U.S. It's insecurity everywhere you look.
It is, to a very great extent, the result of our behavior as a species, but also it is reversible. And so, you know, what more to say?
Hey, we've talked about this soft landing for the economy. That's kind of, we envision a soft landing, I guess, falling on a trampoline or something. Yeah, but it could still be uneven, couldn't it?
It is. In fact, there was an article in the New York Times, I believe it came out Friday in the electronic version, by Talman Joseph Smith, where he says even a soft landing for the economy may be uneven. And it's a nice detailed article. It's not difficult to read. But he goes back to something I haven't heard in a decade, which is the idea that the landing could be K-shaped, so that for some people, the results of the things the Fed is doing and the other things we're doing to get the economy on track and get inflation under control, that for some people they will have a good result, but for others maybe not. So if you're in the, for instance, lower 50% of income earners, or you're a small business person who can't get a loan right now because interest rates are high, the landing might not feel soft at all. But if you're, you know, in the top 50% of earners, or you work for a large corporation, you might find that this landing feels just fine and that the Fed has managed it very well.
So you look at the letter K, those would be
exactly
the people on the upswing, then the bottom half going
exactly
the other way.
So, you know, life isn't always fair. We regret mm-hmm. that, of course, but this idea that what gets engineered by the Fed to get the economy or get inflation under control might not be felt impactfully by all people the same way. And that's not just here in the United States. That's across the world.
So much is talked about, you know, what's called a golden years retirement that you've planned for. Everything seems to go right. Some words of caution, though.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea that we're getting older is something, you know, if you're in your 20s, you're going to live forever. If you're in your 30s,
yeah,
you begin to feel the weight of, you know, a family and all the things you need to do to just manage your day-to-day existence and to get ahead if you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, however, the idea of older age and retirement begins to loom, you know, more obviously on the horizon for you. And what happens is that you begin to think in terms of financial planning and in terms of getting control in the long term of you know, how you're going to live the last third of your life. Fortunately, the availability of financial planning is much higher now than it was even a few years ago, largely because a lot of the functions that, you know, used to be done on a slide rule, if you will, or you know, on a calculator, we have programs to do that stuff. So financial planning is more accessible and more affordable. However, there are still cautions to be had. I mean, you can not turn on the television without, you know, seeing ads for people who believe that their version of financial planning or their version of how they work as advisors for their clients is better than everybody else's. So there's an article that was in, I believe it was in Sunday's Times, by Mark Miller, Financial Planning for Retirement. It's more accessible, but be careful. This is, Bill, the best article on financial planning I have ever read.
You're kidding.
And, you know, this is really good. It's four pages of absolute, you know, clarity of thinking. The first thing he goes into is the idea that today you can hire a fiduciary, somebody who takes responsibility for making your interests first in his or her planning process, rather than any conflicting interests that they might have. So that, you know, they're not trying to sell you products that their boss says, you know, they're supposed to sell you. He doesn't mention CFPs in the article at all, which was surprising to me.
Certified financial planners.
Certified financial planners are pledged to act in a fiduciary role. There are others, certainly, who do the same. He talks about getting professional help, and he outlines several reasons for it. And, you know, managing complexity, managing your finances is complex, and you're always lured into the next magic solution, you know, cryptocurrency being a perfect example of the thing that people thought was going to make them rich and has made them poor in many, many ways. But also moving toward retirement, you know, you have to transition there. And the importance of saving for retirement becomes more and more critical over time. Something that people hate to talk about is protecting against cognitive decline. As you get older, your ability or willingness to deal with detail and deal with the newness of things typically declines, and having a financial planner who has your best interest in mind is really important. Then there's also, you know, peace of mind. You know, just the fact that you know you didn't do it yourself, you got help doing it, and in getting that help, you got the advice from people you trust. So he winds up this article with what type of advisor should you hire, and, you know, of course, the idea that that person is acting as a fiduciary becomes very, very critical. And he talks about a process of how to do it. In other words, you get three names who are fiduciaries and interview all three of them. And gosh, Bill, for as long as I've been on this show with you, we've talked about the fact that you just don't, you know, hire somebody because they said, hey, he's really good at a stock picker. You know, you really need to spend time with the person and make sure that that person is understanding who you are. Then, and he ends the article asking the question, what will it cost? And there are so many different ways that financial planners will charge for their services. They can charge you for a financial plan. You know, you know, give them a grand or $1,800 or whatever it is. They can charge you a percentage of what you have invested with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, the spiel there mm-hmm. is that I do better when you do better. So mm-hmm. therefore, I have an interest in you doing better. Not so sure mm-hmm. about that. But he gets to the point that you should be charged for the work the person does. And if you require a lot of hand-holding and attention, that's going to cost more and should cost more than a person who says, well, let's meet once a year, mm-hmm. and otherwise we'll put a plan in place and we'll just stick with it. So this article, again, the guy's name is Mark Miller. It was in the Sunday Times. It's available electronically. If you don't have a financial plan, if you've been thinking about it, now is a really great time to read that article and begin to look at the steps that you need to take to find somebody who is going to be kind of your financial therapist for the next 20 years.
Okie dokie. Thank you, Shelley Fishman. We will look forward to visiting with you here in studio 1 week from today. Have a great week, Shelley.
You too, Bill.
All right, we'll be back to check out kind of an overview, get the opinion of Wayne Shutsky, who covers government for the Arizona Capital Times. Wayne will be on our live line. Talk a little bit about the governor, Governor Hobbs' first State of the State address, some of Wayne's impressions, big issues, all of that coming up right after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Green Things 3384 East River Road. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business on site, zocalovillage.com. Zocalo Village, some beautiful items from Mexico, many of them handcrafted all over Latin America, and some European items as well. They're in their 53rd year at Green Things, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will be doing next, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now to the state capitol. Wayne Shutsky with the Arizona Capital Times joining us now on the live line. Wayne, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
How about Governor Hobbs' first state of the state? How would you characterize the atmosphere at the state capitol yesterday, Wayne?
It was an exciting day for Democrats, obviously, having one of their own give the first state of the state in over a decade. But we also definitely saw that partisan divide. There some members of the legislature from the more right-wing contingent of the Republican Party turned their backs or even walked out during the state of the state.
Was this a handful of folks, or how many do you think?
It was around 10, yeah. So it wasn't just one or two folks, but it wasn't necessarily enough to, signal a large revolt amongst the party against the governor. But
these are the folks we're hearing about who do not recognize Governor Hobbs as being the governor, right?
In some cases, yes, a few of these folks have either directly said something of that nature or called into question the legitimacy of the election.
All right, let's talk about some of the issues, Wayne. Talk about schools.
Yeah, education was a major part of Hobbs' speech. She spent the lion's share of her time talking about educational initiatives she'd like to take in her first session as the governor, and that included giving more money to all schools versus this results-based funding program that the governor, previous governor Doug Ducey, had championed, and returning some of that money to the base level funding that goes to everyone. She also called for removing the aggregate expenditure limit, which is something your listeners may have heard about in recent months. It's just this limit that would prevent schools across the state from spending all of the money that was given to them in the last budget. And she's calling for the passage of a bill that was sponsored actually by a Republican representative, David Cook, that would override that limit for this year.
That deadline, Wayne Shutsky, is coming up, isn't it? Doesn't that renewal have to be done here before March?
Yeah, March 1st is the deadline. And everyone I've spoken to is pretty confident that it will get done, because there's a good portion of Republicans who want to override the limit for this year, in addition to the entire Democratic caucus. One thing I'm hearing is that, just like last year, they might wait until the end of that deadline in order to maybe exact some use it as a negotiating tool to maybe get some concessions from the governor and Democrats.
Yeah, they pushed it up to the final hours, as I recall, last year. How about school vouchers? This is always a contentious issue, Wayne.
So the governor didn't dive into them a lot, but she did mention she wanted to increase oversight for all non-public K-12 schools that are receiving public money. So she didn't get too specific on what that meant, but that could theoretically mean charter schools. That could mean some of these private schools that are now receiving more money from the ESA expansion that went through last session.
So she wants to redirect some of that money in the program, because I guess Arizona's two largest counties kind of get the bulk of the money, don't they?
Are you speaking on the ESA program or of that result?
The ESA program.
I don't know that she wants to redirect ESA funds. That would have to be done at the legislative level, because they approved a bill last year kind of expanding that. But we have seen a huge uptick in usage of the ESA program since that bill went past, and there's concern that it's going to further drain money from public education as more people take advantage of it.
Over the years, we've seen with Ducey talking about teacher retention. That's almost a perennial, isn't it, Wayne Shutsky, of the State of the State address, and I'm sure it came up with Governor Hobbs as well yesterday.
Yes, it did. Under Ducey's administration, he created the Arizona Teachers College, which was aimed at training teachers here and then giving newly graduated teachers incentives to stay. Now Hobbs has announced the creation of a teacher retention task force to I guess, explore kind of maybe different ideas for increasing the teacher pool here in Arizona, because we've been under a teacher shortage for quite a few years now. I know reports come out every year from one of the associations that represent school administrators that routinely shows that we're underwater by thousands of qualified teachers in classrooms.
Speaking of water, many Wayne Shutsky believe the big issue at the legislature will be our water woe, is what was said yesterday.
The governor definitely touched on that, and it's one of the few issues that I've heard from folks that many folks believe can be kind of one of these bipartisan issues that the Republican-led legislature and the governor get together on. She announced an executive order to create the governor's water policy council that will have a goal of reworking the Arizona Groundwater Management Act, you know, modernizing it for the current issues that we face. She wants to. She's also going to release a report that she claims was kept secret by the Ducey administration that shows how dire the water situation is, specifically in the West Valley up here around Phoenix, that shows that groundwater supplies are being depleted maybe faster than folks thought. She promised to end loopholes that had allowed this Saudi company to basically use water or use state land and the associated water for a very low rate. That had, once the Arizona Republic reported on that, that it caused quite a controversy.
Yeah, we've
so
talked.
Those are some of the things she plans to do.
We've talked to Chris Mays about this issue. Chris, the new Arizona Attorney General, has been focusing a lot on that, about that lease, the Saudi company leasing land in La Paz County to grow alfalfa that is then shipped off to the Middle East. So I think it's kind of called a water poaching loophole.
Yes, and so Attorney General Mays has said very publicly and loudly that she plans to go after that deal and try and pull back whatever can be pulled back. And then it sounds like Governor Hobbs wants to get rid of some of those loopholes to prevent it from happening again.
Okay, and we haven't talked about the border.
Yes, the governor did touch on the border. She said she wants to. She's asking Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to visit the border with her. And so she wants to kind of, I guess, bring, and then she mentioned bringing nonprofit groups and other stakeholders together with the secretary and just trying to work together to find solutions that work for the folks impacted by this. Obviously, the border is in most cases, a federal issue, but the state leaders have a lot of political sway when it comes to trying to convince their federal counterparts to take action.
Like all those box cars that we've seen.
Yeah,
well,
those, those are on their way out. I don't believe Governor Hobbs will be following in Governor Ducey's footsteps in that case.
Okay, Wayne Shutsky, before we let you go, what's the rumors about Ducey? What's he going to do now?
I wish I could tell you, and I'm pretty sure you asked me this last time.
I did.
That last session, and honestly, next to nothing. The only rumor we've heard, which had been reported by some national outlets a while back, is that he might be looking at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce job. But yeah. I don't know if that is a rumor started because it would make sense or because the governor's the former governor had actually expressed interest.
Yeah, I've heard that one. Hey, Wayne, where can people find out more about you and your team at the Arizona Capital Times, and maybe people would like to subscribe?
options to subscribe to our print edition or to the website on there. And yeah, we have coverage of both branches of the legislature, the governor's office, and the broader executive administration.
Wayne Schutzke, Happy New Year to you, Wayne. Hope you have a great legislative session. You'll be busy. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you.
All right. Let's take a break right here. We'll talk with our aviation contributor, the birthday boy, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice. Why is this birthday so much, well, why is it so important to Jeff? We'll find out right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare.
Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster, and we love Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Great sponsor. Only a three-hour drive approximately east of Tucson to a kind of a different experience. If you've not been over there, I think you'll have a great time. In fact, every listener we've sent over there always says same thing. Bill, I had no idea. All sorts of activities, hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, and on it goes. Lots of outdoor activities, but some beautiful indoor things as well, like the Mimbres Pottery Collection at Western New Mexico University. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the website and your first stop in your planning your trip to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line, our Buckmaster Show contributor on aviation, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice, who recently retired after 20 years with JetBlue, where he flew nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free aviation, commanding the Airbus A320 and the A321. Jeff's a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Now he is looking forward to his next chapter in a great career. Jeff, happy birthday to you.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, it's an important birthday for you, 65. Normally, folks would say, "Oh, it's 65. Yeah, it's a milestone." But for you, it's means a career change.
That's correct. When airline pilots, and specifically airline pilots, turn 65, the day they turn 65, they are no longer eligible to fly airlines anymore. So starting today, I cannot fly an airliner. That doesn't mean, however, you can't still be a professional pilot. You can still do corporate. You can still do charter type flying. Obviously, general aviation. That's not restricted by the age 65 rule.
Yeah, general aviation, is there some kind of a thing you have to take a physical every couple of years? And I know as a commercial pilot, you had to take a physical every year. Is that correct?
Well, not quite.
Okay.
As an airline pilot, you need a Class A physical or a first class physical, excuse me. That's every 6 months.
Okay.
And then as a captain anyway. Then there is a second class physical, and that's a lot of first officers get second class physicals out there. I think most require first class physicals. That's every year. And then general aviation is every 2 years.
Hmm. Why don't you tell us, and I hope you will, about the next chapter. What are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm first going to take a couple of months off.
I don't blame you.
And, however, I'm going to continue on basically training and teaching corporate jets. There's a school here in Tucson that teaches Learjets and Bombardier Challengers. And I'm going to start off teaching Challengers, which is somewhat similar to some of the commuter aircraft that you might have flown on. However, they're a little different, but not crazy different, about the same size.
But you can certainly then be flying them. I mean, it's not all simulations. Even though you're 65, you're certainly eligible to continue on this is considered the private aviation sector. Or no?
Yeah, I guess you might call it that. Corporate aviation is basically a non-for-profit type flying. Mm-hmm. So, Raytheon, for instance, probably has jets or some kind of corporate airplane that they'll take. When people fly on that, they're not paying to fly on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what in the Federal Aviation Regulations is Part 91. Then you have the charter types. So you might have heard of net jets and airplanes like that, where you basically go, hey, I want to rent one of your airplanes, and you're going to fly me from Tucson to Lake Tahoe. That is charter. That is for profit, but that's part 135 to be specific about it. And over 65, you can still fly that type of flying. And it can be lucrative. You can either be hired on as a full-time employee on some of these operations. A lot of people will contract fly. Being where I'm at right now, if I do something like that, I just contract it because I don't want to be gone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the main reasons why I was kind of happy I got picked up by a company here in Tucson.
Yeah.
Because I'll be home now.
Sure.
As an airline pilot, I was gone about half the month, total. I'd be broken up in 3 or 4 days at a time, but now I'll be in my same bed probably every night.
Good. Hey, Jeff, before we let you go, your take on Southwest, what have we learned? Anything?
Well, a lot of people, still don't fully understand exactly what happened. But in a nutshell, Southwest was using some fairly antiquated systems for when they have to start canceling flights. And also what complicated that process is that they don't usually use a hub type system. In other words, it's kind of like when you're on a subway. They'll stop at different stops along the way, whereas most other airlines will fly from Chicago to Omaha and then back. Mm-hmm. And then you might go from Omaha to Dallas, mm-hmm. for instance. But those airplanes come out of Dallas to pick you up and then fly on down to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that multiple stopping, you might have pilots that might pick up the flight and continue on. They get isolated, and now you have a compounding thing. We have pilots that can't get on the right schedule with their airplanes.
Right.
And it just compounds. And basically, it's exponentially compounding. So, you know, if you have two pilots that can't make it someplace, by the end of the day, that might compound up to 16 pilots, right? And so you can see the snowball effect that a system like that has. Now, I think Southwest has took it on the chin. To tell you the truth, I think after they finally said full stop, they reset their system. They were able to get pilots and crews where they needed to be, where the airplanes were. And they actually started up fairly quickly once they got their feet back on the ground. As a matter of fact, the day that they did that, I commuted to L.A. for my last trip that I was getting ready to fly. So I went on them. There weren't any problems at all. I've lived through one of these things before. Even though JetBlue was a very, very small company at the time, I know what it's like when the company loses track of where their pilots are and where airplanes are, and they have to play catch up.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing, and it's hard to explain to the public why you're not there to fly them to their next destination. But hopefully they'll fix the software problem. From my understanding is when they have these situations that happen, they had to manually go in and find where the pilots and airplanes were and then manually try to match them up to get them at the right spot at the right time versus a computer that would actually go through that in a matter of a few minutes. Now you're talking days to figure out where everybody's at.
Mm.
And then there's, you know, crew complications like rest and, you know, all kinds of other issues that the laws basically govern when it comes to flying. So, yeah, it was a mess.
Well, you got to wonder.
Hopefully they'll do okay. Southwest is a great airline.
Yeah.
Hopefully we won't see this again.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm sure they did lose a lot of customers, but they have a lot of loyal people. Because some of these cities Southwest serves are basically Southwest cities. They control those markets.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Okay, Jeff, where are you going to? You said you're taking a couple of months off. You're just going to do a kickback? Are you going to try to go somewhere big?
I'm going to kick back a little bit. I have family coming in here in the next week.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go. My mother's still alive, and I'm going to go back and see her. As a matter of fact, she surprised me this morning and called me up. she's 92 years old.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm going to go back and see her in a couple of weeks. But other than that, I'm just going to take it easy for a little bit and walk the dogs daily like they usually aren't used to.
Yeah. They're saying, who is this guy? I don't know this guy.
Oh, they, you know, when I come home, they're pretty happy about it.
Yeah.
They walk and, but, you know, I'm gone half the time, so it's like, oh, bummer, you know, but now they're going to have me all the time.
Okay.
So, as a matter of fact, they're going to be bugging me here in a minute as soon as I hang up.
All right.
Time to go.
Happy birthday, Jeff, and we'll be talking.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Well, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. Back with you, I like to say, in 23 hours, give or take a couple of minutes or a few seconds. But on behalf of John, engineering and producing the show, glad you could be along for the ride today. I think we had a lot of good content. Not that we don't try to do that every day, but today felt pretty good to me anyway, and I'm a pretty tough judge. All right, that's going to do it. Have a great afternoon, everybody.